Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
For those of you that I didn't get to meet yet or see this morning, I'm Eric Pelton. I'm from Falls Church, Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C. I've been working with some members of the NAPBS and the NAPBS itself, mostly on intellectual property issues, for the last 7 or 8 years, really since NAPBS started. I'm a lawyer in private practice. Before that, I used to work for the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office for 2 years, and then 10 years ago, 1999, I launched my own practice. So we're going to talk about social media risks for employers, for employees, and all of the issues that come up with social media. And the issues are really, new issues are coming up every day, it seems like, because the technology is changing, and companies are using it in new and different ways. And we've got a nice size group here, so I'm going to keep it relatively informal. If you guys have any questions or comments or ideas or something you heard about, feel free to jump in and chime in so we can make it a real discussion, because you know there's issues that I don't even know about that have come up, I'm sure, that some of you are familiar with. So, obligatory brief background on social media. These are just a few of the popular social media websites today. How many of you have personal accounts on Facebook or Twitter or some form of social media? And how many of you have or manage work-related accounts on some form of social media? And has anybody here ever used Second Life? I've never used it either, but I've been to a bunch of presentations about it.
Wrong demographic, I think.
Wrong demographic for that, well? Everywhere, they keep, at every conference I go to, they keep discussing it. The thing you have to be concerned about with Second Life and with any of these other things, if you're not on it, somebody could be holding themselves out as your business. Apparently that's going on, where people are saying, hey, we're XYZ. We'll conduct a background check for you, or we'll give you information about our company. And they might be a fan and, you know, just interested in helping out. They might be an employee that thinks, hey, I'm in charge of all kinds of marketing stuff. Maybe I can get some bonus points. I'll do this, and, you know, then I'll write a report about it later. Or maybe it's a competitor and they're really, you know, sneaking business somewhere else. That's sort of an underlying thing here is you should at least check out these things so you know what's going on, because if you don't know what's going on, somebody else could be doing it and not doing it well, or doing it in a way that harms you. But the latest statistics from Facebook I pulled up yesterday, they've got more than 500 million active users around the world, 700 billion minutes per month on Facebook. I have no idea how many days or weeks or years that adds up to, but it must be a lot. And obviously, more and more we're seeing businesses get involved in promoting things and using these networks to market and interact with both their employees and their customers. Let me go back to the previous slide for 1 second. You'll see like Flickr and YouTube and SlideShare are some examples of sites that aren't perhaps traditionally you wouldn't think of. This is where I'm going to hang out and communicate with friends or communicate with customers. But they all now, you know, if they link to other people or they link to your Facebook account and share what you're doing on that, on SlideShare with all of your Facebook friends, it's essentially a social site as well. So more and more sites are having this social element. YouTube, same thing. I've got a YouTube channel. People can subscribe to that, and I can subscribe to their channels and interact that way. And so it's not quite the same level of interaction as Twitter or Facebook, but it's a social interaction nonetheless. Social media content can come in any variety. That content can really be created. You know, most of us probably think of text. You know, you write a message to a friend, you post a message, or you tweet something. But it could be a link to another site. It could be a photo that somebody else took. It could be a photo that you took. It could be a video. It could be audio. It could be a computer program. You can interact on almost any form of media or with any form of media via these social networks. And that's part of the danger, is that it's a lot more than just text. When you get into other people's web pages and other people's audio and other people's video, there's a lot more exposure for intellectual property violations and other dangerous activities. These are a couple of recent news stories covering some issues where social media has gone wrong. I was just reading today, actually, in a magazine about a case in Ontario, California, which I think is not too far from here, outside of LA, where a police officer had a work-issued pager and had they did an audit to find out if they were giving them enough minutes or not under their plan that the department had, and this one officer had way exceeded the daily limit, and they found out that like 80% of his messages were going to his mistress and his wife and were sexually explicit and were all kinds of trouble, and so he got disciplined. And then he sued and said, this is a violation of my privacy. And the court said, no, it's not. It's not a violation of your privacy. Your workplace had a policy and they can monitor these kind of things. And we're going to get into policies a lot later because policies are really where it's at and what's important. But these are some of the types of issues that you have to deal with. A teacher that criticized her students and employers got fired. A woman who, this Facebook story is about a woman who was suing for a defective product. She fell off of a chair. The chair broke, she fell off of it. She sued the manufacturers of the chair because it was defective and caused her great injury and pain. They found on her Facebook posts, she had posted pictures where she was standing and walking and running and happy and smiling, which was, you know, the complete opposite story of the complaint in the case, where she was bedridden and miserable and couldn't get out of the house. And so the judge held that they were discoverable. Even though she had privacy settings and they were only, I believe, shared among her friends, they still said that this was a discoverable form of communication as evidence in the case. I don't know how the case turned out, but I'm about 99% sure that her claim didn't go very far after that. I mentioned intellectual property, I mentioned criminal activity. Intellectual property can be a couple of things. Somebody could misuse your company's own intellectual property, or somebody on behalf of the company could be misusing somebody else's intellectual property that could expose you. Another big issue is if somebody is representing on an account, you know, that's a company-owned account, what they're doing, and it's not quite clear is what they're doing on behalf of the company or on behalf of their individual view. Say it's a political view that the company doesn't want to get involved in, or say the person's really working for the company part-time, but they have this account, you know, a LinkedIn account set up through the company, and they use the LinkedIn account at work to network and market, and then they leave the company. Who owns that LinkedIn account? You know, if it was used for work purposes, I think it's probably the employer that owns the account. But LinkedIn's policies are that the user owns the account. There's been a case about this in the news recently. LinkedIn's policy is that the user owns the account, and LinkedIn, you know, refused to basically transfer the account to the former employer. These are the kinds of issues that people got to work out now. So what can employers do? What can a business do to take all of these risks and help control them, help understand them, help mitigate them, help reduce the risk of causing problems? Well, they could monitor all of their employees' activities. That is an option, and that is something that some companies do. They could have company policies about social media use and activity, and that's what I advocate, and I'll share some examples with that as we go on. They could have actual, built into their actual employment contracts, very specific terms about what you can do, what you can't do, and make it a real contractual obligation. So, companies that choose to monitor their employees, in my experience, my opinion, are actually causing more problems. Because if you monitor, or you say that you're monitoring everything that the employee does, then if the employee does something that's wrong or harmful or bad, the employer should have known about it. And the employer is now in more hot water as an entity, as an organization, than just the employee having acted on his or her own. So monitoring can be quite dangerous.
What if they're to outsource that or with a third party? So then basically they're making best efforts to monitor, to enforce the social media policy, yet there's a third party organization. Something that happens, that organization is making best efforts, however it happens.
I think it's really the same.
The company hired a company to enforce a social media policy. Otherwise, they have a social media policy, but they're making no effort to monitor that or enforce it. So therefore, what the efforts are making is to then work with a third party that then has the tools and technology in order to do it.
That might be a good option. I'd want to know more about what the third party was going to do and how they were going to report it back to the employer. But again, then the employer's either going to have knowledge that they have to either act or not act on, or they're responsible for having had that knowledge even if they never got it. That's the problem with the monitoring.
Well, if they were to define very specific criteria about what they're looking for and say that everything's
so,
reviewed.
Well, when we get into the policies, what I would advocate is they say what is prohibited type of activity. They say, we have the right to monitor it.
Right.
And then if they have a suspicion, they could monitor something. Or I think what I've seen in some provisions is we have the right to store everything that's done on work equipment, and then they could go back and check it later. But what you don't want to say is we go over every record every day, and therefore that knowledge is imputed to us.
Well, if that employee engages in wrongdoing, wouldn't that create a greater, because they're expending a good faith effort to monitor, this is a policy that should be created, there's protocol, but it was breached by the employee, didn't follow protocol. Wouldn't that sort of increase or reduce the liability to the employer?
It would only if the employer knew about it right away and dealt with it right away. But I think when they're, it's more likely that they're not going to find out about it right away. They're not going to know about it right away. And they'll only sort of be trying to clean up the mess later. And then it's this, well, they should have known about it. So having a policy and having the ability to monitor is good. But again, being responsible for monitoring everything, you can't control everything. For example, if you're going to monitor everything, you've got work equipment, right? But I can sign on to my work Facebook account from my own, phone on using whatever username I have access to. And then
but if you're like a third party is able to monitor their outside activity, then they're to the point here, but an employer has an obligation for negligent hire retention risk. So if they say don't do this, but then they make no effort whatsoever to in fact enforce that, they say that they might, but they don't, then it seems the liability could be on them for that purpose.
Right. I think there's an opportunity here on the third party.
We can take offline.
Certainly. Yeah. Okay. But it's a small distinction between the we're going to monitor this versus we have the right to monitor this, and it's to protect the employer. Okay. So a policy, which is what I advocate, should educate the employees about the risks, and basically, the types of stories that I began this presentation with, and a discussion of these issues with the employees, so they understand we're not just here to try to make you more productive or crack down on the fun you're having on social media. That there are legitimate reasons that the company should be concerned that these type of things can happen. Our trademarks could be misused. We could infringe on somebody else's copyrights. We could set ourselves up for liability in a variety of different manners, and educating employees about why you're creating a policy and why you're having this discussion with them. Share the goals. What is the company's objectives in social media? Is it to communicate a message, just a one-way message about our products? Or is it to interact with the customers? Is it to be on as many social networks as we can? Or is it to have a consistent message, that we're going to direct all the traffic to X, Y, or Z network? Are we going to have our own network? you could have your own website where you have customers interact. One example of this, and you don't have to have your own website, I mean, you can do it through a third-party website, is where users submit commercials, ideas for videos. I had a client, the Doritos commercials that they do during the Super Bowl, right? They have a contest, great idea. They get all these people talking about Doritos for free, making these things and sharing the videos with their friends to try to get votes and publicity. But what they've done is create a type of social media network where they're going on and voting and posting these videos. Well, if one of the videos is a ripoff of somebody else's intellectual property, Doritos could be liable for that. You know, what type of agreement do they have with the users? That's one small example of a network created by a company. A company could also have a network internally where they have sort of an intranet and they encourage employees, let's say, because they're spread out across the world, to share information about their hobbies or share information about what they're working on and interact that way. The key is to communicate as part of introducing this policy, communicate with the employees what the goals are, what the risks are. Another issue on the social media policy is who owns the content that's created, and that's something that should be contained in any policy. For example, I gave the LinkedIn account example, but for example, if you're using a marketing firm as a contract employee and they're in charge of, they have access to a Twitter account and post things about this marketing campaign they're working on, well, who owns the content that they've generated when that project is over? It should be in writing, it should be a part of a contract with them, it should be a part of the policy internally as well. When an employee is working on a social media project, who owns the content after that project is done, after the employee leaves, or after the subcontractor leaves? Employee, it's going to be relatively easy because the contracts that they probably have hopefully cover intellectual property belonging to the company. But a subcontractor, like a website developer, or just an employee who's a part-time or a project-based employee that doesn't have a full employment agreement, they may not have any contract in writing that covers intellectual property, and it may be a lot more cloudy as to who owns the work and the accounts that they set up. So a social media policy, it could have some examples of what types of use of our trademarks and brands are proper, what types of uses are not proper, how intellectual property could be violated if we incorporate somebody else's song or video or photos into something we're doing without getting the proper licenses and permissions. I think that it should be a dialogue, though, with the employees, and that maybe it could even be worked on with the employees to come up with the details of the policy. Maybe you have an employee committee or task group that helps come up with the policies, or at least helps review the policies and implement the policies to make it more of a teamwork kind of thing rather than just this is the direction from the top and there's no argument about it. Because what you're doing is going to be in some way changing what's already out there, because if there's no policy now, it's a free-for-all, because that's what the internet is. And to go from having this free-for-all of lots of creativity and lots of different possibilities to saying, this is where we are, people don't like to be told what to do, especially if it's changing what they're doing. So you have to be careful with that in the way that you implement it. Now, I mentioned the monitoring, the policy, and then an actual contract would be sort of another option. I think that having an actual contract sounds so burdensome to the employee. What I would advocate is we share this social media policy, we have a presentation about it, and then all of the employees sign something. They don't sign the actual policy itself, like a contract, but they sign something that says, I've read the policy and I attended the presentation and I understand it, and this sort of supplements my other employee contract. I think that's the way that you get their consent in writing in case that there ever is an issue down the line without making it too onerous or burdensome to create unhappy employees. Another area of social media related to all of this that comes up every day is terms of use. Whenever you create an account, and then really whenever you log on to or use an account, you're agreeing to the terms of use of Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, whatever site it is. I don't read the terms of use. Has anybody here ever read one of those terms of use? All of it?
Oh, I'm a lawyer, so.
Yeah. And did it make sense?
Generally, you kind of see what they're trying to get away with some of the time, at least half the time. I remember Facebook had the big stir when they briefly changed their terms of use so that anything you posted they would own for basically a turn.
But yeah, they're right on user.
I think they had to back off that somewhat, but.
It seems like it's largely just about whole harmless, about reducing their life.
A lot of it is indemnification. But a lot of it is that they do generally have a worldwide royalty-free license to use your intellectual property. So, example I came up with is, say somebody comes up with a wonderful slogan, you know, and they tweet it. And next thing you know, Twitter's marketing, it's on the front page of the Twitter website, you know, this new slogan. And they're selling t-shirts because it's something cute about Twitter. And Twitter selling t-shirts that say, you know, best tweet ever, whatever the slogan is that I came up with. I would have no way of stopping that. That's how powerful the terms of use are. We need to be aware of the terms of use. Somebody at the company, if you're using work-related accounts, needs to be in charge of being aware of the terms of use so that they can maybe summarize a little bit about them in this social media policy, maybe even keep some sort of database of the terms of use when the accounts were created. They are, of course, they say in the terms of use themselves that they can be updated at any time, and you sometimes get updates. Particularly ridiculous terms of use I've seen are from Apple iTunes. I created an iPhone app, and of course have bought iPhone apps, and every month now they're updating the terms of use on it. It's ridiculous. And you know, it's so easy to just hit accept and click and it's done, and you've only seen about 20 words on your little phone. If you actually, there's actually a little button you can check to ask them to email you the terms of use, and it's like 50 pages of legalese that gives them the right to do basically whatever Steve Jobs wants. So the point is that the terms of use, you give up a lot of control, there's nothing you can do about that. But at least be aware of that, make the employees aware of that. A lot of it is intellectual property provisions. And if you have your own, if you're using your own network, like the Doritos example, or like you're having some sort of interaction with customers where they're contributing content or joining some sort of forum or community, then you need to have your own terms of use and make it clear what they can do, what they can't do, what you own, because you want the right to use what they're contributing, and what the limitations are on that. That should be drafted by a lawyer. Pretty much the only thing worse than not having a terms of use is having like a template terms of use that doesn't even make sense, that you like copied from some other website that does something totally different than what your website is. And there's lots of people who have done that. Intellectual property protections, we've covered a couple of these already here. The last one there is the easiest one, and I would encourage everybody to go out this week and see how many usernames are available on some of these websites for your brand names. They may already have been taken up, maybe by an employee, that's a good thing, but maybe by a fan, that could be worse, maybe by a competitor. I've got a client now that's got a competitor registered his Twitter username. Competitor runs another restaurant in the area, and the competitor sent out some sort of sarcastic joke, posts pretending to be my client's restaurant. They're pretty easy to take down if you have your trademarks protected. But at least find out.
Or is it illegal for them to do that? Is that some sabotage or some other?
Yeah, that's like unfair business practices, yeah, right. Passing himself off as somebody else, you know, plus a violation of the trademark and the Twitter usernames. So it should be relatively easy. But if you don't have a registered trademark, it's a lot harder because Twitter kind of, most websites, they don't really want to get involved. They'd rather not be the arbiter of a decision. But if you have a registration, they've got a policy under DMCA and, you know, that they pretty much have to follow, and it's pretty easy. There's some websites, one of them is called Noam.com. There's some other ones where you can actually just put in a name and it will show you. It has, 200 or 500, whatever the most popular social media sites are in there. It'll show you what's taken and what's not taken. And then for a fee, I think that it'll show you for free. And for a fee, it'll actually go out and register, reserve, however many you want. That's a great idea, I think, even if you're not using them. Even if your company has decided, we're never, ever, ever going to want to do social media. It goes against everything we've ever done. Just to make sure that somebody else isn't doing it and then causing problems and requiring you to get a lawyer later to send a letter or fill out the forms to take it down. It's worth a little bit of time and energy to cut that off before it becomes an issue and go out and just register the names. In terms of protecting intellectual property too, it is nice to have, if you have this social media policy, some examples, a guide for the employees about how to use the intellectual property properly. How to use the registered trademark symbol or the TM or the SM for trademarks and copyright notices, how the logos should appear if you're going to be uploading logos to these accounts, because most of them have some sort of image, as part of the profile or in the background. So you want to make sure that they're using the proper versions of the logos with the proper notices, proper color specifications, and all of these things, because if you don't, you're diluting the value and the strength of that intellectual property. Not only your contracts with your employees and your subcontractors we mentioned, but even in joint partnerships, you might work with another company to create some sort of new product or service and have a plan to market and promote this. Well, in the contract, you should include, who's going to be in charge of the social media aspects of the marketing? Who's going to control the accounts? Who owns the accounts after the relationship is done? Who owns the intellectual property that's created from these accounts? These are issues that are often overlooked. If they're put in contracts, it makes it black and white, and it saves a lot of time and energy later on. I'm going to skip the hosting content networks because we've already discussed that vis-a-vis terms of use and the other issues that arise when you have users or employees participating in your own network. Questions, experiences, ideas, because all I have is questions really. There's not a lot more information because this area is so new. I could discuss endlessly, other ideas or questions or issues that have come up. I don't really have all the answers because the answers aren't out there. A lot of it is common sense. It's applying what's happened in other technologies, what's happened in, in other arenas to social media. It doesn't really rewrite the law or rewrite the rules. It's just a new tool for communication, but there's been a million new tools over the years for communication. And it takes a little bit of time for the law to catch up. But the really important thing is for companies to catch up, to put it in their contracts, to put it in their social media policies, and really cut off the issues before they arise. Do you have a question in the back?
Yeah. On texting, any lawsuits come to mind? And also any best practices that both the employer and employee should be doing? Social media sites like Twitter, Facebook, they all have an interface that you can use on your smartphone. That's what prompted my question, seeing your smartphone visual.
Two things come to mind there. One is texting is just like any other communication. It's more similar to email probably than to social media, but there are lots of lawsuits. I mentioned these pager devices where this police officer got suspended for inappropriate messages. He sued for privacy violations and lost. There are lots of cases now with students getting suspended from school for what they're posting or what they're texting or what they're tweeting. And then lawsuits come about from that after the suspensions. In the workplace, today, Brett Favre is playing on Monday Night Football. He's being investigated for inappropriate text messages. It's just like any other form of communication. They're saying if what is alleged is true, the commissioner, might suspend him for a couple of games. So it's not anything new. It's the same common sense should apply to it as it does to everything else, but it doesn't always apply. The second thing that it brings to mind is just your social media policy or your other workplace policies covering work-owned equipment in general, to say that, that we have more control over what happens on work equipment and that we can monitor that or store that. If it's a work phone or a work device that the messages are being communicated on, then the workplace is going to have more right to monitor and to deal with that. And so a workplace should have a policy that says these are what uses are prohibited on any form of work-owned equipment, and then list out the various types of equipment that that the workplace could own.
As an employer, can your policy cover things that, for instance, like you say, we don't want to see photographs on your personal Facebook page of you engaging in activities that are legal for them, since over 21, but they're drinking, shotgunning a beer or something on their Facebook profile. Can you legally say, we have the right to terminate employment if we see something like this on your personal profile, even though it's a legal activity?
Well, would it be locked down, or would it be public?
Public. Let's say it was public.
Say it was public, say it was done on a totally personal account from home. Versus many states, if you have it in the contract, you can fire anybody for any reason at any time. Okay. So, presuming that's the case, then yes, they could say, we don't like your conduct off work. But I think that's, that's the same thing as if, one of the partners in the company was out to dinner at the same bar that night with, with their spouse, and they just happened to see the activity. Now it's just easier for somebody to see that activity.
Well, or you can make an argument that they're not representing the company well, right?
Right.
Teacher.
But, the key thing is to say, if you're going to, if you have a workplace account that you're in charge of, anything personal needs to be very clearly in a separate account, and you cannot commingle that. To protect the company.
Certainly some of the people we work with, folks, social media, they have their policies on very specifically address issues such as if you are wearing a company shirt, you're doing this and you do this type of things, you now want to choose to be taken from the training and doing other types of things.
It's better the role too, and what's just been relevant and draconian, but I mean, it's kind of like Apple said you can't smoke a cigarette within 1,000 yards of the building. Right, and so I mean, they can say if you want to work here, basically these are the terms, and so whether that's not drinking or smoking pot or whatever it is on your Facebook profile, even if it's public, it just like you said, we're in that enforcing policy. That's why I'm trying to show it so much in this competition.
Came to mind another important area that we didn't touch on yet is screening potential new employees, because I know that's what a lot of businesses here are involved in, and whether or not to use social media for that. There's a lot of debate about that, I think. There's a lot of dangers, my understanding, from doing that. I'm not an employment attorney by trade. I'm just an intellectual property attorney by trade. But you know, that's the thing where it can set you up for potential liability if you make decisions that are discriminatory.
But you're exposing yourself to things that are not allowable or relevant for hiring purposes that prevent the class.
Exactly. Or age or marital status or pregnancy status or whatever other things are prohibited to come into that factor as a decision. You're setting that up because how are you going to look at an account and not see those pictures and not be influenced by them in some way? It's very difficult. I've heard about companies trying to set up, you know, where they would have just a special person that would review the social media and bring anything, you know, to the attention of the hiring people that wasn't related to anything that could be discriminatory. That seems like, again, like it's asking for more trouble to me. That's my personal view.
Aren't you negligent? And you know, you have an obligation as an employer to protect your existing workforce and your customers. And so if you don't do that Google search and it's obvious that this guy's got, you know, a tattoo of a swastika, and then he assaults a customer or harasses an existing employee, that employee says, look, this was on the first page of Google, and you made no effort whatsoever to protect me from this person that you would have known. And look, I mean, you're liable for that. That's why all of us here, what a criminal background check's about, right, is making sure that you're making best efforts.
That's the balance, I guess. 10 years ago, you wouldn't have been able to find that. It either wouldn't have been online or you wouldn't have been able to find it, and people still made hiring decisions. You wouldn't say, well, I know this person lives in this neighborhood. Why don't we send out a team to go scout all the bars in that neighborhood and see if this person likes to drink, you know, or if their apartment smells like pot or, you know, something like that.
But there's things that are like way more offending, things that are sexually explicit photos and videos online, things that are clearly illegal activities online and some of those other things that really, even by the Fair Credit Reporting Act, you can make decisions based on poor judgment and obviously having a tattoo of a swastika or something like that on your Facebook profile would suggest that you probably have poor judgment.
Yeah, well, again, this is this balance. I think that you're exposing yourself to more liability by opening up these channels. But if there's a way...
Well, you're putting yourself at a higher disadvantage because your competitors absolutely are doing a Google search. So you can put your head in the sand, right, and not do anything about it and not do the search. But yes, you are setting yourself up for negative hiring. And yeah, and you are going to face adverse selection, right? Your competitors are going to do the Google search and know they're unhirable because they have something that's terribly incriminating online. And now those are going to your hiring pool.
I want to take your question. The competitors may be doing a search. They may find a guy named Eric Pelton with a swastika tattoo. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's me. Or even somebody, you know, my ex-girlfriend could have posted some sort of mock picture that was photoshopped of me with a tattoo or me holding a beer when I was 15 or, you know, whatever. So the data integrity based on these websites is also very flimsy, is it not? And the identity of the person?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's ways around it, but yeah, obviously, you know, it's up to later. Give me a good thought.
I like the discussion, don't worry. Yes?
My thought on it is, the FCRA, we have to verify everything we provide, essentially, it has to be provable, hopefully provable that it's accurate. A guy could have a picture of what it looks like he's smoking a joint, but it could be a handle of cigarette, and unless you were there when he was, you know, puffing up, and that's where I think in the Photoshop, and, you know, and there are ways digital photos and that sort of thing. But I think that's why we stay out of it.
But as far as being FCRA, as long as you're in a consumer reporting agency, as long as you provide a well-documented resolution policy, adverse action is about to be taken on you because of this. This is how you deal with it, to say, dispute that. And I think if you're a reasonable organization, they can make an argument, right?
Well, then he just says, well, if the hand-rolled cigarette proved that it wasn't, then...
You know, okay, so you let it go. So, okay, well,
the results is on the top of the Google page. It should be on the corporate record as well. Right? I think, you know, we use the corporate record as more reliable. So it's hard to prove. It's really hard to prove, you know. The person is the person. So I think, you know, in this case, we say if the person is on Google page, we should be able to find it, you know, what is the corporate record.
I mean, I think it can vary. It's a clear MySpace picture that's been there for a long time. You have an email address that they put on the resume. That's email address that's focused there. They talk about the school they went to. too, and that's what the school does all year.
It's still, you know, any people can make any good idea in Facebook. I can make them, I'm a painter, right? So there's no solid proof that you're not good. So that's, I think, the weak point of the social media. I can make you the idea if it's not taken by you.
As long as you have a dispute resolution process, and that person goes to me, I mean, 95% of people that catch me dead to rights on this say, okay, sorry. But the ones that are probably innocent are going to dispute.
My two cents also would be from a policy perspective, if you're a large organization, what type of A, message are you sending, and B, double standard are you setting yourself up for? In other words, if you're deciding not to hire people because of X, Y, and Z that you see in their Facebook accounts, what would happen if you went through your 500 employees? How many of them would have those characteristics in their Facebook accounts already there? You know, it's sort of, you might get more than you bargained
for. Same for your criminal background check, but it's the same logic, right? And more and more companies do criminal for the same reasons, right? And so you say, well, look, we did the criminal background check. He's a felon, but he's been a great employee. I'm not going to now fire him because he retroactively went back and did his criminal background check. I'm now just doing this moving forward to protect my disciplined workforce from negligent hiring. Or credit or anything else, right?
Yeah.
Use credit to take care of various people and they're necessarily bad at risk. Well, the thing is, we didn't use credit 5 years ago.
The problem is that the way this will get solved is through lawsuits and we don't want to be involved. We don't want to be the guinea pig lawsuit. There's been a few, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, I'm sure it's.
And that's why.
I'm sure it's exploding and keeping a bunch of lawyers busy.
But I think it's going to break the other way. I think the lawsuits are going to break the other way. I think the Andrews chasing lawyers are going to say, well, I can allege discrimination now because this person blogged about their pregnancy, right? And this person was denied 20 jobs when this person was clearly qualified for these various jobs. And so that's going to happen. And then we're going to see a lot of lawsuits for that reason. And then on the other side, on the negligent hiring. So I think their employees are going to be in a pickle here.
And I think, you know, if the employees are obviously in a position of safety or, obviously the hiring requirements that go into being a police officer or a security person are not the same as somebody who's the firing clerk.
Correct, you're right.
And so you have to make judgment calls based on, you know, what's really important here and where are we going to draw the line. I think we only have a minute or two left.
Yeah, I understand email and text are just like telephone, they're all forms of communication. Have you seen, and anybody in that group can chime in, people, either the employee quitting via text or vice versa, the employer firing the employee via text? I'm not talking content of the text, I'm not talking sexting, I'm just talking submitted, you know, I quit, I'm gone, via text message. And on the flip side, the employer, the boss, finding an employee via text. See any trends out there? Anybody?
I'm not aware of it, but I'm certain that it's happened. You know, I'm sure it has.
Anybody else? Would you remain silent if you've seen it? If you haven't seen it, then talk up. So we'll do it that way.
Well, it's sort of done in person, right? And you think you call somebody or send them an email or texting is you have 140 characters. So I mean, unless you're not
your fire.
I mean, certainly, you know, certainly there's been a lot of boyfriend and girlfriend that have fired over text.
Yeah,
but.
If anybody else wants to continue the discussion or has any questions. Otherwise, thank you all for attending. I hope you enjoy the rest of your conference. And I'll also make the PowerPoint available on the NAPDF website. I hope you have some more days.